This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic, amazing Tuesday. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the media. Jim Acosta did one of the grosser things I've ever seen from the media. I'm pretty difficult to shock at this point, but he managed to pull it off. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll make fun of John Cornyn doing exactly what I told you he was going to do. We'll get to some emails. We have heavyweight boxer Ed Lattimore coming up about a half hour from now. It's always cool to talk to those guys, heavyweight boxers. And Ed can actually talk. So many of those heavyweight boxers just don't talk very well anymore. What, Chris? Yeah, Chris, it's not healthy to be punched in the head for a living. But Ed's wonderful. So we're going to talk to Ed and do all kinds of stuff. Now, I'm going to play something for you. I could tell you what it is ahead of time, but I'm going to play it for you. You remember who Jim Acosta is? Jim Acosta was the CNN reporter during Trump's first 4 years who was always doing the theater kid routine during the press conferences, making it all about him, just the ultimate theater kid, just an embarrassing commie human being. He sat down, I don't know if I should say for an interview, but I'll tell you what, I'll just play it. Be ready to be creeped out when I tell you what it is.
Joaquin, I would like to know what your solution would be for gun violence.
Great question. I believe in a mix of stronger gun control laws, mental health support, and community engagement. We need to create safe spaces for conversations and connections, making sure everyone feels seen and heard. It's about building a culture of kindness and understanding. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea, Joaquin.
Are you ready to be creeped out? You may want to go start the shower right now, because when I tell you what that was, you're going to need to clean yourself. I'm just warning you. Joaquin Oliver. Joaquin Oliver was one of the students who was murdered by that monster in the Florida school shooting, Parkland. You remember that? The Parkland school shooting, Joaquin Oliver lost his life to a madman. So maybe you're asking, how was Jim Acosta interviewing him and he was spouting off gun control talking points? Jim Acosta interviewed an AI version of Joaquin Oliver, who is dead. Artificial intelligence. It's not real. It's a computer model. And Jim Acosta interviewed it. He interviewed it, obviously, for gun control propaganda, so you can be disarmed. Let me play it for you again. Joaquin is not real.
Joaquin, I would like to know what your solution would be for gun violence.
Great question. I believe in a mix of stronger gun control laws, mental health support, and community engagement. We need to create safe spaces for conversations and connections, making sure everyone feels seen and heard. It's about building a culture of kindness and understanding. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea, Joaquin.
Maybe you're sitting there wondering how any human being could go to sleep at night knowing they're interviewing AI dead children in order to push gun control. How could you do that? I'm just trying to think, what's something I'm majorly passionate about? Pro-life. I'm majorly passionate about pro-life.
What if they could create an AI dead baby that could talk to me and say, I wish mommy hadn't have killed me? I would never in a million years even consider doing something so soulless and creepy and awful and evil in every way. These people do this stuff. How? They're religious fanatics. They are religious fanatics. I have told you before, if you want to understand how these people really think, you would be better off, instead of studying politics or Democrats or reading this book or that book, you would be better off studying Islamic Jihad. Radical Islamic Jihad. I'm talking about the terrorists who blow themselves up and fly planes into towers, and they blow up women and children, and we're always left baffled. Why? And we dig into it, and almost always one of these young men has gotten himself into a radical mosque where he was taught by his people that in order for his religion to prevail, in order for evil to be defeated, that he should go do something terrible. He should go blow himself up. Go set off that nail bomb in front of a bunch of school kids. And you wonder, and in the aftermath of these horrible things, how in the world could anybody justify doing that? How could you think you're the good guy when you're about to kill a bunch of kids? He is a religious fanatic who believes he's doing it for God. That's how communists think about their revolution. They are in a revolution to attack and destroy every single good and decent thing on this planet, and they believe they're the good guys in this fight. They do. They think they are the good guys in this fight, and they will do anything. How could they lie? Lying? God wants me to. How could you interview an AI version of a dead high school kid? Well, our enemies, the enemies of the revolution, they're armed, you see? They have all these guns. We know we're going to need to hurt them. If we're going to complete our revolution, we have to be able to physically hurt these people. We can't physically hurt these people if they have all of these guns. Therefore, we need to disarm our enemies by any means necessary. And so, if it means coming up with an AI model of a dead child in order to push gun control, well, that's what the revolution demands. Soulless. Radical jihadis. It's exactly what they are. Radical jihadis. All right. Let's do some emails. Jesse. Why is Trump suddenly allowing Lindsey Graham to conduct foreign policy? Okay, so I'm not going to go into the rest of this email because there's a lot of potty words that I can't try to wade my way through. So I'm just going to set the email aside for a moment. I don't know that I would say at all that Trump is allowing Lindsey Graham to conduct foreign policy. I will say this. Trump, as we've discussed before, is excellent at foreign policy because he views everything as a business deal or everything that can be solved by doing business. So if you have these two companies, look, Cambodia and Thailand, they're fighting each other. What does he do? Sit on, hey, why don't we work out a deal? We'll do some trade with you and we'll get some things going for you. And let's stop, put the missiles down, put the guns down. Let's do a deal. Let's just do a deal. Everyone wins. We'll do a deal. We'll be on a private jet together. Let's do a deal. That's extremely effective. It's an excellent way to conduct foreign policy. But it doesn't work everywhere. You know, Iran, Israel. I mean, I ignored it the night they announced the ceasefire. And then after I ignored it, they proceeded to drop as many bombs on each other as they possibly could over the next 6 hours. And Trump got mad. Remember when Trump got mad? Dropped an F-bomb about it. They don't know what the beep they're doing. Why is he so mad? He doesn't understand. Hey, I just said we have a deal. We have a deal. I was going to give something to you and you were going to get some. Why are you doing this? We have a deal.
There are places that don't want a deal. They're not interested in a business deal or private jets. They're not interested in those things. They're interested in killing each other until one of them wins. For somebody who's used to doing deals his entire life and getting things done like that, that's very frustrating. When Trump lost it on camera, and he never trashes Netanyahu publicly, but he dogged on him by name publicly, and I know they're close, by name, two people who don't know what the beep they're doing. I saw the frustration coming out of him, and I got it entirely. Hey, I sent my people over there, and I worked out a deal, and now both of you are crapping all over it? Don't you want a deal? Some places don't want a deal. That actually leads me perfectly to Putin and what he just said before we get to Putin. American-made, American manufacturing is something a lot of people brag about. You know that Byrna, BYRNA, the Byrna launchers, those compact launchers that shoot the pepper balls and tear gas balls, you know they put those things together in Fort Wayne, Indiana? Do you know that after they had started Byrna, they dug in and figured out how to make it all here? That became a passion project. It wasn't all sales. Hey, we want to sell to this private security company. No, they wanted to make it in America. I like American-made stuff, and there's nothing more American than Byrna, and it will keep you alive. Maybe your husband alive. Maybe your wife alive. School season's coming. Are you about to send your daughter off to college with nothing to stop a bad guy? They're legal in all 50 states. You don't have to worry about her getting arrested. No permit needed. They'll mail it right to your door. Hey, employers, do you think maybe your employees should have something so when that deranged psychopath shows up to kill everyone, they have something? Employers, BYRNA. Byrna.com. Go get one. We'll be back.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We got heavyweight boxer Ed Lattimore coming up about 10 minutes from now, but along the lines of what we were just talking about, and I'll do some emails, but Donald Trump wants wars to end, and he deserves all the credit in the world for that. When they start, whether or not they started before him or started after he gets here, he just wants to do a deal. Let's everyone make some money. Let's stop the fighting. So what has happened, just let's briefly go over this again with Russia, Ukraine. Russia, they have a goal. It's not to take all of Ukraine, but they want specific regions. There are actually four of them they want. They want four regions, and they want all of them. They have, honestly, most of them. They want them. They want to keep them. They're the most valuable regions in Ukraine. We're talking warm, the only warm water port, valuable resources. Also, the people there speak Russian. Russia thinks it's theirs. Ukraine thinks it's theirs. We don't have to go over the history again. We've done that before. So they're not leaving. Trump keeps trying to get everybody to a deal, trying to get Zelensky to a deal, trying to get Putin to a deal, and yet they don't want to do it. So maybe you have seen or heard about Trump blasting away at India. He has publicly blasted India a couple times over the past couple days, threatening them with tariffs. In fact, he announced he's slapping a big fat tariff on them earlier. Why is he doing that? Did he just get into some bad Indian food? No, it's not that at all. As if there's good Indian food. It's not that at all. Well, how has Russia been able to keep going? They've been fighting this war for years. They've lost a bunch of men, but they're losing a bunch of equipment too. This is a country with an economy smaller than the size of Texas's economy. And I realize Texas's economy is big, but they can't match us. No, they can't even match China. They can't do that. How are they still going? In fact, economically, they appear to be thriving. Oil.
Russia has droves of it. China and India are buying it all. Russia is able to fund their war effort because they sit on an ocean of liquid gold China and India are purchasing. Trump is trying to force Putin to the negotiating table by providing Ukraine with weapons and by threatening India with tariffs so India stops buying the Russian oil. That's Trump's goal. He wants them to stop buying Russian oil. But China and India are the two countries with the most people on the planet. They have all kinds of domestic problems themselves. They don't want to stop buying Russian oil. They want to keep buying Russian oil. And so think about the rock and a hard place we are in as a country. I was going to say Trump is in, but it's our rock and a hard place. He wants the war stopped. If he's committed to that, if he's committed to things like tariffs on India, well, then he's going to have to slap some big tariffs on China too. Big tariffs on China means America's economy, which is sadly very linked to China. America's economy is going to have some hiccups, speed bumps, some not very pleasant moments. Things in your life, things in my life getting more expensive. Is Trump willing to significantly harm the American consumer in order to try to put an end to Russia-Ukraine? I don't know, but I can guarantee you this. These are the discussions they're having in the White House right now. It may very well take that. And how understanding and accepting are the American people going to be if they start showing up and pharmaceuticals? Do you pay for medications or know someone who does? What if that cost doubles? Do you think the American people faced with double the cost of pharmaceuticals are going to accept as an answer, well, I'm trying to stop Russia and Ukraine? They will not. And this is the tough game we play. All right. There's a ton of history to this region. If history is your thing, go download our podcast on the Crimean War. Chris, what year, what date was that? We did a long one on the Crimean War. Maybe you've heard of the Crimean War. Well, let me spoil it for you. This is where it took place, on the Crimean Peninsula here. Countries have been fighting and dying for this specific area for a long time. And keep in mind, that's because from that area, from the Crimean Peninsula, you can sail, you can ship your way out to the open ocean. It's really the only place in that area where you can do so. Having a warm water port where you can ship things is critically, critically important. And the Brits went down there and mixed it up with the Ruskies, and we did a thing on it. Chris will look it up at some point in time. By the way, if you like any kind of history, you know Hillsdale will teach you. It's not just me. Hillsdale does it better than I do. By the way, that was March 10th, 2025. We did the Crimean War episode, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Anyway, Hillsdale will teach you about the fall of the Roman Republic. Well, its rise and its fall. That may be uniquely appropriate to us. How about the history of the ancient Christian church? That's not something people talk about a lot. We know what's in the New Testament, but what were they going through? What about the Constitution? Maybe economics is your interest. Would you like to understand capitalism with a level of depth that none of your school teachers had? They have a 7-part Understanding Capitalism series. You'll be fascinated by it. Let Hillsdale teach you at no cost. More than 40 free online courses where you can dig in and get smarter at no cost. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. You like to nerd out with me on history? Go nerd out with Hillsdale. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. We have a heavyweight boxer next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Tuesday. Chris, Ed picked that song? This doesn't seem like Ed at all. Now I'm totally uncomfortable. Maybe he's changed. He's a father now. Joining me now, heavyweight boxer, and I guess now author, Ed Lattimore, who has a book out called, what a title, Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business. First of all, Ed, your music selection sucked. What was that?
That was Big Love by Fleetwood Mac. You know, I've been jamming. I don't know how I found that song, but I love it. I came out to it in my fight. I don't know if you know, I just fought. I stepped back into the ring. I fought 2 weeks ago, won by first round knockout. But, yeah, I it gets me amped. I was worried how it was going to make me feel coming out. But when I heard it, when I was in the walk-up hall right before they bring you out to walk in front of the crowd, I was like, okay, yeah, this is a jam right here. Now, I've been working out to that song a lot.
You know, I can't believe I just insulted Fleetwood Mac. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know that's who that was. But either way,
you know, look, what? Because it's not on Dreams, a lot of people don't know about it.
Dang it. Ed just one-upped everybody on this. That sucks. Okay. but I have to ask, because we're talking to Ed Lattimore, and we're going to find out about life and the book and everything else. You just fought. You're like my age. What's going through your mind before a fight? You've got to be just so pumped full of adrenaline. Your mouth has to be full of battery acid. No, what is it like before you go out? What is it like?
Not even close. And how old are you?
44.
Okay. So I'm 40. So we're in the 40 club, but, it's, you practice hard, you train hard. I had a lot of faith in what I figured out in the 9 years I've been off. And so I'm going out there and I felt really, really good and comfortable. You know, when I did get a little nervous though, this was the heaviest guy I'd ever fought. When I was fighting continually and then my ring stepped back. My plan is to drop a weight class. But because of the stress with the book launch and the press leading up to it, I decided I'll just take the fight at heavyweight. And so I weighed in at 215. The guy was 258. And when he linked up, when he clinched up with me, I said, okay, like this dude is not as good as me, but if he gets me, he can hurt me. And he actually got me with a pretty good shot in that fight. I was like, okay, you know, game time, we're live. But leading up to it, I'm not nervous at all. You know, I've been boxing since I was 22 and been in all types of fights. I've been hurt before. I've been knocked out. And so now I'm just like, oh, okay, this is nothing. And I know what I'm doing, too. It's not like it's a random fight on the street. Now, you know, we locked up on the street or something. I might be nervous because I don't know what the rules are and what the guy can do. But in there, no, it's a controlled environment as far as I'm concerned. I feel great.
Tell me about Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business. What's this about?
So a lot of people don't know this. I found out with a poll, but the Hurt Business is another name for boxing. Sometimes they use it for MMA, but generally boxing, when someone talks about the Hurt Business, that's what they're talking about. And the book is a memoir. It's my story of pretty much how I got into boxing and how boxing changed my life. So the first third of it is my childhood, and you get to see you get to go back to the ghetto with me and see how the hood shaped a lot of the things that I came to think and a lot of the habits I developed. Same with the abusive home I was in. That all that really, it was actually kind of hard to write about it, a lot of that stuff. But it it takes a nice warm turn in high school when I went to a high school across town and met some great people. Then we get into my boxing career, but that also coincides with me really struggling with drinking. But I managed to have a great amateur career. And then the last third is where we dive into my pro career and how a lot of those changes came together. But ultimately, you know, I had the loss on TV, which sucks because it's like the worst way to lose. But when you get embarrassed like that, and that's what it really is, embarrassment, you realize being embarrassed ain't that bad. Like I walked away with my faculties and everything. And so that's the story kind of in a nutshell. And the way I broke it down is, you know, each story from my life told kind of chronologically, you get to read the development. It's themed around I extracted a lesson and created a great little title for the subchapters and the main chapters.
Speaking with Ed Lattimore, author, well, I guess heavyweight boxer. I shouldn't probably refer to him as author because he'll probably kill me. But heavyweight boxer, author of the book Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business. Ed, it's very, very difficult. I mean, it doesn't matter if anyone's offended by this. It's very difficult to overcome a bad upbringing. It just is. Most people, the vast majority, do not. They don't escape it. They repeat it. It's human nature. Why do some and others don't? Is it the right coach? Is it, what is it?
You know, I've thought about this so much with my life, and I can really just trace it down. First of all, like, you're 100%, like, more right than a lot of people will ever give it credit. Your environment and the family you're born into make all the difference in the world. And we've tracked this in so many studies, everything from income to your chance of being incarcerated to mental health. Who your family is and where you live matters. There's no way around that. You don't get any control over that. But as far as how I managed to have a different fate, I think it was just gradual introductions to different environments. For whatever reason, I was born with a lot of agency. And so when it was time to go to high school, I chose a high school completely in a different part of town instead of the high school I would have been fed to, which would have kept me around that environment. And going to that high school all the way across town, we're talking like an hour bus ride there and an hour bus ride home, so 2-hour commute every day. That was the first chance I got to see just a completely different world, a completely different set of people, different ways to be, and a different social circle entirely. And it was the first of many experiences that changed my life. And I really have to trace it back to that. And I want to say I got lucky. I mean, I chose the school. I mean, I guess I could have chose a poor school, but it was an educated decision. But I did get lucky in the sense that I was born with the agency and sense to know that I need to do something different. I didn't like change the school thinking it would change my life. I just didn't want to be bullied, harassed, and picked on, and have to worry about fighting every day. And I wanted to be like, you know, in a cool or a less stressful environment. That's all it was for me, is just trying to be in a less stressful environment. And it turned out to be easily, like, in terms of the scope of my entire life, the best decision I made. And it all started when I was 14.
Who is the animal that bullied Ed Lattimore?
Man, look, I grew up in a public housing project. You know, you get bullied. I always hesitate to call it bullying, because one thing you do learn coming up, my mom instilled this in us really hard. You fight every time somebody tries to fight you. Make sure they understand that there's a cost. So, you know, they're gonna call me names, whatever. I'm not going to swing on that. But people didn't really put hands on me after the first few times guys tried to put hands on me, because they had to decide if it was worth what was going to come. I didn't know whether I won or lost a fight. There was going to be a fight. And a lot of guys don't have a taste for that. But that's psychological. You got to push against everything that tries to push against you to let it know you're not going to go quietly into the night kind of deal.
He is Ed Lattimore, author of the book Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business. Ed, I probably should have asked, because I know you're on a book tour right now, but can you give me a couple more minutes after the break real quick? I want to ask you, because there are people listening who want to get, and maybe they're not going to be Ed Lattimore, but they want to get in shape. They're maybe interested in this kind of stuff, how to improve themselves. You got a couple more minutes for that?
Oh, for you, for sure, man.
Appreciate you, brother. All right, we're gonna go to break. We're gonna come right back. I got a couple more questions for heavyweight boxer author Ed Lattimore. Before we get to that, you don't have to hurt because Relief Factor is here. That's why, right? Maybe Relief Factor, maybe it's the cure for the hurt business, Chris. I don't know. I can't say. What I do know is it's 100% drug-free. It's a supplement you take every single day that will turn down and eventually turn off the pain in your life. The things you used to do that you would still do if it didn't hurt. What if you're doing them again in a month, 2 months? How much would that better your life in every possible way? Go just try it. Just try it. Give it 3 weeks. And all I'm asking, don't order any more if it doesn't work. Give it 3 weeks. You will order more. It's miraculous. 1-800, the number 4 relief, or relieffactor.com. We'll be right back with that. Hang on.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're gonna love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show. I still can't believe the first time we had Ed Lattimore on the show, he picked some rap song, which I actually liked, and now he's playing Fleetwood Mac. It's just wild to me. Okay, Ed, before we get back to boxing, I understand you are a relatively recent father, and actually you said something on social media yesterday about how, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, it makes you angry at your father. And I've felt this forever, that I don't understand how you can grow up without a father, with a bad father, and then repeat that cycle, especially once you hold that wonderful little baby in your hands. You can't help but love it. Don't you want to like raise it and teach it stuff and be there with it? I totally got what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't think about my dad for a very long time. He died when I was 18. He wasn't really around. And it wasn't until I was holding my son one night when he's doing what babies do, which is cry and be fussy. And I'm just like, man, this is miserable. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. That's part of the gig, right? And it's a cool part of the gig. You can't skip that. And I felt that loving protection that I guess you feel. Mm. And then I was like, why? What in the world motivated my dad to like not want to be in our lives? And that really, really bugged me when I started to think about it, because I hadn't thought about it for a long time. I just hadn't. And then seeing my son, it was overwhelming. I was like, look, man, I don't even like going to the store, like, because I got to be here with you. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I try and get him to come and still get coffee with me. He's like, sometimes our other, but right now he's in a phase where he says, I want to stay with mama. And I'm like, okay, you can stay with mama. But like, that's what I mean. It's a very different feeling. You process old feelings very differently with new experiences. Mm-hmm. And that experience really, really brought up some memories that I didn't even know or some feelings I didn't even know I hadn't yet to process.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Tell his mama to enjoy his time now, because I'm telling you, as a man with two sons, they will slowly but surely separate from her, and now I can't get rid of them. They're in my back pocket all the time. All right, boxing. Ed, people are out of shape. A lot of people were out of shape. Look, I'm not some Greek god either. How do they start? Is that something people should be interested in? People get older. They don't want to get hurt. They don't want to get their head taken off. Is there something for normal people in that arena?
Yeah, for sure. You know, look, most people don't fight professionally. They don't fight amateurly. I tell young men that I think you should all at least have an amateur fight or two, you know, to see what it's like. But anyone can join a gym and learn how to throw punches and get the cardio benefits. You don't have to get in the ring and with somebody to fight. Now, if you do, way more power to you. I think that's great too. But if you're just looking for a nice introduction, you don't need to get in the ring. You don't need to fight, is what I should say.
Ed Lattimore, the book is Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business. Ed, where can people get it?
You can get it anywhere, man. This is my first book with a publishing house, and one thing they do great is distribution. Somebody sent me a pre-order receipt from Target. I was like, wow, I didn't even know you could do that. But yeah, you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I read the audiobook myself. I fully understand why they got to pay people to read books, even their own. And it's a long process. And it's one of those things no one really warned you about it. But it was okay. Funny quick story. We had it scheduled for 3 days, and by the end of the first day, we were pretty far behind because I forgot my glasses at home. I'm at that age where I need my glasses to read. Mm-hmm. I can't make a mistake. I couldn't tell the difference between like bad and had. but when I brought my glasses the second day, we actually got caught up and then blew past it. But it was a good feeling. So if you read the book, you get to hear me narrate it, which I think is really important for this type of story, to hear the person who wrote it.
True story, Ed. I've only written one book, and I don't have any intention to write another one. But they, too, told me to do an audiobook and read it myself. And I was so screwed up that I read, the first chapter really, really slow, to where I found, that I'd been – it sounded like I'd been punched in the head my entire life. I couldn't sound anything out. I screwed the whole thing up, and it was miserable. I may end up doing another one one day. I'm never reading another one, ever.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was funny when they were like, yeah, we'll pay you this amount, which is the standard rate. I'm like, I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a voice actor. And then I did it, and I said, yeah, you had to pay me to do that. That's not something I do for free.
He is Ed Lattimore. Hard Lessons from the Hurt Business is the book. Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you. Come back sometime. I've always thought that would be quite a feeling. Walking towards the ring of a boxing match. You know, what's going through your mind? I remember George St. Pierre. He was a boxer. He was a big MMA fighter. Corey will remember him. Chris is 12, so he won't. Unless he starred in a comedy, Chris wouldn't know. But George St. Pierre was one of the great MMA UFC fighters of all time. And I watched him do some interview one time, and he said, now this is a bad dude. I watched George St. Pierre beat the living crap out of the baddest dudes on the planet many, many times before. So we're not talking a normal person like you or me. He's a bad dude. He was doing this interview, and he said before fights, I guess everyone's different, he was so scared every single time that he used to fantasize about the building losing power so he didn't go out to fight. And he said he would put it into his mind so badly, he'd be looking up at the lights, wanting the power of the building to go out so he didn't have to fight. What, Chris? What? That's a very good point, Chris. Chris said, do you get nervous walking into a new restaurant? That's a good point. It's something I'm so great at that I don't feel fear. Not the way mortal people feel fear when they're walking into a restaurant. I know I've mastered this. I'm the master at this. The menu whisperer. I mean, I practically strut into the restaurant, and I know that I'll deliver. I will deliver for me. I'll deliver for those around me if they choose to lean on my incredible skill set. So in a way, I'm just like a heavyweight boxer. All right. We still have another hour, and we have all kinds of stuff. I should probably get to a bunch of emails and things about, you know what? Let's talk about viewership. If the media is losing all these viewers, how are they still in business? Let's talk about that next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.